south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Hey, now here's a first. After doing 800 and something shows, this is the first time I've ever broadcasted during a power outage, a big one too. Now, normally the power grids are pretty good here in Latin America since they privatized so many of them. Only the ones that aren't privatized are crap, like in Costa Rica, Venezuela, Cuba, you know, the usual suspects. That's what always happens when you've got the utilities run by fat, lard-ass bureaucrats who don't give a damn if the service sucks because they can never get fired. Anyway, a good 3/4 of Latin countries have private or private partnership utility companies that are pretty damn good these days. So power outages for no apparent reason are rare, except again when the government owns the power utilities. I remember when I was first in Costa Rica, every few days at 5 in the afternoon, the power would go off for a couple of hours like clockwork. Oops, did I really say that? I meant clockwork. You know, sometimes my brain locks up. I get Freudian slips when talking about government. Anyway, in more than 3/4 of Latin countries, the power grids are pretty damn good now. But, you know, after a storm, especially when a big one rips through and they've got some doozies down here, oftentimes power will go out for 20 minutes, half hour, an hour, 2 hours. And if a transformer's gone down or a tree fell across the power pole, could take, well, as long as it takes. So anyway, a few hours ago, big storm ripped through, have had no power for around 3 hours. And unfortunately, I'm not in my usual place of residence where I've got solar power and I'm all set up for these kind of things. So today I'm in a rental in a residential tower. Of course, most decent residential towers have a backup generator. You know, one of those big ones like they have in the hospital, diesel job? And those things, you know, kick in within 30 seconds of a power outage and you're all set and up and running again. That's what a backup generator is for. And that's what happens normally. In this case, in the place that I'm at now, the generator did not kick in. And it's a brand new one, too. Can you guess why? Maybe you can. You know, we could chalk it up to the old standby. This is Latin America, you know. But the maintenance guy... Wait a minute. Talk about oxymorons, huh? The Latino maintenance guy, there's one for you. Well, the maintenance guy neglected to maintain the fluid levels in the battery, so it was dead. You know, those big diesel generators are like a diesel truck motor. They have battery starters. So there's another idiot move we could chalk up to a so-called maintenance guy. Although that's slightly more forgivable if you consider what happened last time the generator didn't kick in. It was because, well, the maintenance guy neglected to check the level of the diesel fuel tank. A genius move. Yep, power went out. The generator tried automatically to kick in and just wouldn't fire up. No fuel. So that's what you're up against here in Latin America? Even though you see so many places these days that seem completely first world. Shopping malls, subdivisions, residential towers, hotels, first world franchises, business offices. When you look at them, you can tell they're absolutely built to first world standards. But you can't put first world standards into the maintenance guys, who in almost all cases live in a skanky part of town. They got municipal water, which is only on a couple hours a day. So they're used to that inconvenience. It's not an inconvenience for them. Besides that, they've got no backup generators, no AC. Sometimes their windows don't even have glass in them, and definitely no car. Though they may have a beat-up 90cc rice burner, but that's about it. Oh, and did you know that the chances are your cleaning lady and maintenance guy never buy so-called bottled pure water? They drink right from the tap. Why? Because for them it's an unnecessary expense. So then you might ask, do they or their kids sometimes get stomach disorders? Damn straight. In fact, the CEO of a company who makes water filters told me that's the number one reason Latin American kids miss school. Speaking of water, if the power goes out in your subdivision or in your residential tower, there goes your water pressure. Why? Because cisterns operate with electric pumps. Of course, you know, your building or project will need a cistern because if you're on municipal water, that means you're living in the city, of course. In reality, you won't have water 24/7. Though it will seem like you do, because your water will always come flowing out of the tap. Because you see, when city water's not flowing, the water's flowing out of the cistern that's either on your roof or under your garage slab. Now, these cisterns have a float in them, like your toilet tank has a float. So that float will open a valve to allow the cistern to fill up, while the municipal water is flowing, of course. Then, however many hours a day your municipal water is off, your cistern is supplying the water, and you won't even know because the transition is seamless. But believe me, you'll get pissed off rather quickly when there's a power outage. Because after a few minutes, or depending on which floor you live on in a residential tower, your tap water will peter out down to nothing. Now, everything I've been talking about since the beginning of the show would be of completely no concern to you if you had a solar-powered electric backup or a compact gas or diesel generator for yourself. And that's why I spent a couple of shows talking about having a portable backup solar electric power supply. I'm talking about, at minimum, a portable one, just in case there's a grid down, like I'm having right now. That's why you've heard me say so many times before, you have to have, for one, a gas stove, not electric. And if you don't have a solar hot water heater, a gas hot water heater, and a gas dryer. And if you've got the dough, you can even get one of those gas refrigerator freezers. Yep, they've got refrigerators and freezers that run on propane gas and natural gas too. They're interchangeable. That's how refrigerator freezers work in RVs, by the way. That way, if there's any kind of grid down, you won't care a bit because you'll have a tank or two. I always recommend 100-pound tanks of propane gas. Two is better, and that's all you'll need, because two, if you're easy on them and conserve a little bit, could and will last a family of four anywhere from a half a year to an entire year. That is, you'll be able to run the dryer, cook your food, heat your water, etc., etc., for an entire year without electricity. Of course, if you've got a gas dryer, it'll have a motor that'll take some current to spin the drum. So you'll need an electric power source. Just a small portable solar electric generator, you know, solar panels and a little all-in-one lithium battery controller outfit, will handle all your electric needs in a power outage except for air conditioning. For that, a portable system won't do. You'll need a bigger system or a dedicated solar air conditioning system. That's something that didn't even exist 2 or 3 years ago. Now, suppose you were renting in one of those hot beachfront tropical climates and your air conditioning bill was killing you. Oh, and by the way, if you're in a residential tower and there's a power outage and you're in a very hot tropical climate, there goes the air conditioning and man, you're going to suffer. Anyway, these days you can buy a complete package solar air conditioner unit. Most of it looks exactly like your standard air conditioning unit you see in towers and apartment buildings, with a nice sleek little quiet horizontal unit close to the ceiling somewhere in the room you're air conditioning. Then there's the condenser and the blower unit outside somewhere, usually on the roof or in the backyard. By the way, that's what they call a split AC system. Half of it's in the room and the other half is outside somewhere. Now, with the solar AC system, you've got those two parts. But they also come with from 2 to 4 solar panels and the necessary lithium-ion battery storage pack so you can run the AC at night. Now, if you're interested in checking out one or more of these things, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you a couple of links. By the way, these solar air conditioner units are very, very efficient, much more so than your regular air conditioning. Why? Because, you see, your regular air conditioning unit has to change your AC current in the house to DC to run the fan and compressor, etc. And that conversion from AC to DC is inefficient. But, you see, solar panels put out DC directly, so there's none of that conversion and the energy's safe. But you knew that already, right? Anyway, I'm looking right now at a number of these things on Alibaba. Name brands too, like LG, Panasonic, and others. And the cost, well, you know, they're rated in BTUs. Let's say, for example, a very big room would need probably a unit rated at 12,000 BTU. By the way, BTU means British Thermal Unit. Another piece of useless information courtesy of me, Johnny, at the Expat Files. Thank you very much. Now, where were we? Oh, yeah. Whereas a small bedroom would require an AC unit rated at 6 to 8,000 BTUs. Now, the cost? These units start at around $1,000 and up. But remember, that's the whole works and you'll never use electricity for your air conditioning again. Of course, we're assuming your doors and windows aren't leaking like sieves. Now, if you're renting, it's very unlikely you're going to have solar power. And if you're renting on the cheap, it's unlikely your residential tower or condo complex, whatever, is going to have a backup generator like they have in hospitals. A rule of thumb here, if you're paying under $500 a month, normally there won't be a backup generator. Anyway, to me, it doesn't matter if you do have all that necessary backup stuff, because when it comes to water, you're on your own. What I mean is, you should still have a couple of 5-gallon, what they call garrafones. Those are those ubiquitous big plastic blue jugs you see all over the place here in Latin America. When you buy or exchange them, they're supposed to be filled with purified water, but that's debatable. And even though you can't trust the plastic in those bottles not to leach, I'm saying pick up a couple of those, because as mentioned, when the power goes off, there goes the water pressure. However, if, as in the usual case, it kicks back in within 10 or 20 minutes, no problem. But, for example, I'm stuck here now. It's been around 4 hours, no power. I'm on the bottom floor, so I had water for the first 2 hours, trickling down from the upper floors thanks to gravity. But now, and I just checked, there's no water pressure at all. But I've got 2 5-gallon Gatafones, they call them, that you can buy at the local grocery store for something like $3 a piece. That is, if you're exchanging an empty for a refill. If you're buying one for the first time, it's around $10. So when you first buy them or refill them, they're supposed to have purified water, but I always dump it out and fill them up with the water that I purify myself. So that's the setup you should have if you're staying at a place more than a couple of weeks. For example, renting an Airbnb. Now, if you're renting an Airbnb in a residential tower, generally they'll have a backup generator that actually works. But you never know. By the way, speaking of my particular favorite portable solar power setup, well, stay tuned, because in the very near future, I'm going to be telling you all about that system, how to use it, where to buy it, and how to have it shipped to your location if need be. Now, again, I'm not talking about a whole house off-the-grid solar power system. I did a few shows in the last year talking about that stuff. I'm talking about a portable all-in-one unit that weighs, without the solar panels, around 30 pounds. It's got a handle on it, so you can bring it anywhere, throw it in the trunk of your car, and head out to the beach, the boonies, or anywhere. And that's the power and the battery unit. Then, of course, along with that, you'll need some portable solar panels to charge it up. But not just any portable solar panels you pick off Amazon. You'll want a particular portable suitcase panel, as they call them. They fold up nicely, have a carrying case, and handles. Now, of course, there's tons of that stuff on the market, and a lot of it's really underpowered, light-duty, and flimsy. So, naturally, I spent a lot of time checking out those things and sourcing out just the right system I think the average gringo and expat would need to get you over the hump for pretty much any short-term power outage. Even in a long-term power outage situation, days, weeks, months, you'll have to adapt and cut back, but it will serve you and make your life a lot easier. Now, you know, I don't make any money off of this stuff, but you see, since I'm sourcing it out for myself, you'll get all the info here first. So stay tuned for a report on what I consider the best portable solar units. Now, speaking of so-called pure water, the other day I was in a grocery store with a fresh, brand new green gringo. As we walked by a virtual wall of those 5-gallon blue-tinted plastic water jugs, he said, "Johnny, I don't get it. Everyone's got one of those things in his shopping cart. And every time you're on the road, you see trucks just loaded to the gills with those things delivering to houses." I said, "Yep, those things are standard issue for all middle-class, upper-middle-class, and wealthy Latinos." He said, "Why keep buying that stuff when you can filter your water at home? Most all big hardware stores sell units you can put on or under your counter." But he said, "So far, I've never seen one of those things in someone's home, except for you, Johnny." I said, "Yeah, it's kind of strange, because if you do the numbers, after they've spent 6 months buying this water at the grocery store, they could have well afforded a really nice under-the-counter unit that would really purify their water. I mean, it would be guaranteed." He said, "Then why don't they? It's an obvious win-win situation." I said, "It's a couple of things. One, lack of education, and Latinos fall for marketing every time. They think if the water's coming from some big industry supplier, it's got to be definitely better water than anything they could purify themselves at home. Reason number two, and probably most importantly, it's a matter of maintenance. I'll tell you, most Latinos, if they have one of those under-counter systems installed, they'll use it all right, but they'll forget, or they haven't been informed, weren't listening, or didn't read the instructions that the cartridges, the filters, have to be replaced every 6 months or so. And since the average Latino does not have plumbing tools, even to replace the cartridges, they'll have to call a plumber or handyman and buy new replacement cartridges. It's just too much of a hassle." By the way, a plumber and a couple of guys working at hardware stores told me, most people who buy the countertop or under-the-counter filter setups will end up sooner or later going back to the grocery store and buying those 5-gallon jugs again. So again, it's maintenance or lack of it, marketing combined with an incomplete education. But keep this in mind. You've heard all the stories, and you've probably read over and over again that bottled water, so-called pure water, is not pure at all. In fact, most of them are no better than tap water. And the brand name, Expensive Waters, nothing but tap water run through a sediment filter and then dechlorinated. So I ask you, if they've got those kind of problems up in the first world where they've got tons of regulations, imagine what the bottled water and so-called pure water companies can get away with down here in Latin America where no one's checking. Sure, when you buy a bottle of water here in Latin America, if you look on the label somewhere, they've got a couple of seals verifying water purity. Even certification from an international water testing group, and those seals of approval are real. They're not faked. However, you have to remember, those seals were obtained when the company first got into business, which could be 10, 15, 20 years ago. So they did send samples to an international lab. The samples passed with flying colors, so they were allowed to put that seal on every bottle. Though it's quite likely it's been years since they've sent those samples out to be tested. You get the idea. All right, speaking of purifying your own water, like I always do, I'll make this offer once again. Send me an email, theexpertfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you out the instructions on how to build, that is, assemble, my under-the-counter and portable water purification systems, the ones I use myself. You'll see you can build your own under-the-counter system using a 5-micron sediment filter as the first stage, a silver impregnated ceramic cartridge filter as the second stage, and a carbon black filter as the third stage. So under-the-counter, that means you'll have 3 identical blue canisters. That's the color they usually come in. They're the standard 10-inch long jobs. You find them at almost every hardware store and pool supply outfit. So then you might ask, how long do those filters last before you have to change the cartridges? Well, the 5-micron filter is about $2, and you change that every 6 months to a year, or when the water flow coming out of a little auxiliary spout starts flowing in a trickle like a guy with prostate problems, instead of a nice solid stream more or less as thick as a pencil. Now, the next stage, the center canister, is the workhorse of the system. It's also the most expensive part of the system, anywhere from $35 to $50 on Amazon. But if you're careful, you'll never have to replace it in your lifetime. What'll happen over time, you see, is it'll get gunked up on the outside. In time, you'll get a brownish scale that's loaded with impurities, and that's what'll slow down the flow of water. So when you notice the flow rate going down, all you have to do is pull it out and clean it. That ceramic filter is filtering all the way down to 0.1 micron or less. Now all you have to do is put it in the sink, run tap water over it, and take one of those rough plastic sponge scouring pads. Nope, not a metal one, a plastic one. I think one brand name is Scotch-Brite. Then you sort of lightly sand the outer surface of the ceramic filter, and all that gunk will come off, and you'll get down to fresh, light-colored ceramic. Then you're back in business and good for another 6 months to a year, depending on how dirty your water is. By the way, most of those ceramic filters are colloidal silver impregnated. That means they're bacteriostatic. They kill bacteria or don't allow them to multiply. But when you're cleaning it, you have to be careful. Ceramic filters are sort of fragile, and if you've got one in your hand and you drop it a foot or two, you might crack it. It's like pottery, ceramic, just like the name. So when you're cleaning it, be careful not to drop that thing or bang it around on your porcelain sink. I ought to know, I was clumsy and broke one myself. It didn't shatter, but it put a hairline crack in it. If that happens, you shouldn't use it. And the third filter, the final stage, is a carbon black filter. It's not what most people think. Activated pulverized carbon. You know, the kind you put in a fish tank that's granular and you can pour. We're talking about a solid block of carbon. And the cost? Around $10. When do you change it? Well, in time, as it absorbs volatile impurities like chlorine, etc., it'll lose its capacity to pull out other organics like glyphosates, pesticides, and those nasty estrogen breakdown products from birth control pills you find in city water supplies. So if you're in the city anyway, the easiest way to tell if that carbon block filter is saturated and you should replace it is if the chlorine taste in the water starts coming back. However, if you haven't got much chlorine in your system and you really can't tell, it's best to change that thing every 6 months to a year. Now, about carbon block filters versus activated granulated carbon filters, the carbon block's always better because with the granulated charcoal, water can find channels and find the path of least resistance. It can't do that with a carbon block. It's a solid piece. So basically, if you use a system that I recommend, you can put it together for under $100, a do-it-yourself thing, and your replacement costs every year to keep it maintained, generally around $10 to $15 if you don't screw up and break the carbon filter while you're cleaning it. However, if your water's really mucky and trashy, you might have to change that first stage sediment filter 2 or 3 times a year. Remember, it's only $2 a crack, so No big deal. And the filters, all available at your local pool supply store, in whatever Latin country or city you're in. Also in most big hardware stores. And if not, you can get them right on Amazon. All right, speaking of food and water, this comes from the from what I've been saying all along department. Here's a little snippet from an article in Spanish again entitled, Alimentos no se manipulan bien. Translation, street food is not being handled well. Subtitled, Montezuma's Revenge, the gift that keeps on giving. This one comes from an Ecuadorian rag. It says, those of you who are queasy about food in the large and small mercados and street vendors might want to apply the ignorance is bliss principle and stop reading this article now. It says, recent research by a group of professors at the University of Cuenca, Ecuador, found a large proportion of the food sold on the streets and in the mercados contained salmonella and Bacillus bacteria. Ew. Pointing out in the case of meat and chicken, the food is not normally eaten raw, and proper cooking should kill the salmonella and fecal bacteria. But the techniques in manipulating that food before it gets to you and your mouth is the unknown and what is called in question here. All right, me, Johnny here. You know, every time I read an article about food poisoning, high levels of salmonella or fecal bacteria, I keep reminding myself that cooking does not eliminate salmonella or fecal bacteria. It just kills it. It's still there, and you're eating it. Only it's dead, you hope, and it won't multiply in your digestive tract. So let me repeat this once again. Seems like almost everyone who comes down to Latin America eventually gets Montezuma's revenge, and sometimes over and over again, especially common with backpackers and people who stay in hostels and people who eat street food. Man, I can't tell you how many times I've walked past one of these street kiosks and there's some backpacker sitting there shoveling down some greasy concoction up to his knuckles in taco sauce and mayonnaise. Then he'll stop and pause for a second to lick the juice off his fingertips. And you know, a lot of these guys are tree huggers, vegans, and vegetarians. And yet, when it comes to settling up and paying the bill, they'll lick those same fingertips to count out their funny money. These are the very people who will tell you that getting Montezuma's revenge is an occupational hazard for travelers. They'll tell you the locals are immune. They grew up here. They've gotten used to their own particular brand of bacteria, and we're not. And you know, it's the same in reverse. If they come up to the United States, they'll tell you. They're not used to our food and our bacteria, and they're going to get our version of Montezuma's revenge, known as the Hershey squirts. Anyway, this article ends by saying the research scientists believed those high levels of salmonella and fecal bacteria were due to bad food handling with respect to hygiene and poor and inadequate use of cleaning implements and a shortage of purified water, which begs the question, anyone for tacos? All right, enough said about that. Now we have this from the Gringo Go Home department. This one also from that Ecuadorian newspaper entitled Elecciones de la Reina. Translation, electing the queen. All right, it's time to stop and explain a few things first before we get on with this. You know, a long, long time ago, probably 5 years ago now, I did an Expat File show talking about how important it is to Latinos and Latinas to elect beauty queens for this, that, and everything. In fact, not only does every grade school, middle school, high school, college, etc. elect a new beauty queen at least every year. Oh, and by the way, they don't elect kings, only queens. You've also got almost every major company, be it a flour exporter, sugar, tobacco, pineapple company, even a company like Bayer or Nestle or UPS Latin America, electing a beauty queen every year and making a big deal out of it. Not only that, every time there's a holiday or a weekend fair called a feriado, they have a competition to elect a queen. All right, there's the background. On with the article. Elecciones del Reina, electing the queen. It says, the last time the requirements for the candidates for the queen of Cuenca, Ecuador were changed was in 2009. And to change the rules, it takes the current queen, who is, by the way, Cristina Ortega, and a commission of ex-queens to vote on and make any pageant changes. Then it says, this year, for the first time in 10 years, taking their cue from the gringo/gringa expat culture influencers, and I don't mean that in a good way, the pageant commission has been working to change the statutes and application procedures to eliminate anything, quote, discriminatory or un-PC. Oh no, here it comes, huh? Then it says, some of the new changes include liberalizing the height and weight and body size requirements of candidates, again, to appease the gringo-gringa jumbo first world body type plus size trends. as well as the fact that beauty pageant candidates no longer necessarily have to be single. Then it says, the present controversy started when the Fundación de Reinas de Cuenca, that's the Queen Foundation, listed the requirements on social media. The first requirement was that the candidate, quote, haber nacido mujer, means must be born a woman. That'd be, you know, for the uninitiated, having two X chromosomes. How odd. What an unusual request. By the way, it's not chromosomes with an N, it's chromosomes with an M. Then it says that statement caused a reaction from the nascent Cuenca, Ecuador LGBGT WTF community. Then it says the Commission of Queens backed off. They responded by saying they respect the LGBGT WTF community and are open to helping them. But they pointed out that this year, it must be taken into account that the LGBGT WTF community in Cuenca is having their own Reina de Cuenca pageant and thus can apply to their event any rules and regulations they wish. All right, now I'm jumping down this article to read the listener comments at the bottom of the page. It says, and this one's apparently from a bilingual gringo. He says, wow, I don't believe it. Could it be jealousy? I invite you to take a drive down the red light district any night and check out the transvestites gyrating on the street corners looking for fun or tricks or whatever. And tell me that an LGBT contestant wouldn't have a chance of winning a conventional beauty contest. Wow. Some of those travestis will make you drop your jaw, and not a pudgy one in sight. I think maybe it's sour grapes and what the traditional pageant people are worried about. Meaning the stiff competition, no pun intended, and the subsequent publicity. Then he says, in the end, it makes you wonder how much time, effort, makeup, padding, and yards of underwire it takes to transform yourself into one of those tall, beautiful, street-corner travestis. Then there's this comment from, I'm sure, another gringo. He says, I admire beauty in all its forms, as much as the next guy anyway, even when the next guy is not quite a guy. But what isn't so obvious, though more so now, is that when do-gooder gringos arrive on the scene and spread their cultural activism and snowflakeism around, that's where our problems with the local cultures begin. It's ironic considering we're always complaining about when foreigners land in the USA and don't want to or bother to assimilate. All right, me Johnny here. So what's the bottom line? Well, maybe there is no bottom line, but you can see the unintended secondary effects when gringos start piling in. That's why I've always preferred to live well off the tourist trail.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos!